Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans thrive in their civilian career. Today is episode number 295 with Amgen.
You know, get on the military.com best for vets list. You know, get on the recruit military, military friendly employers list. Look at those companies, and most likely they probably have someone like me who's dedicated, you know, to doing those types of things. And most of those companies that are on those two lists or any of those lists, I know for a fact have dedicated military recruiters. So if you're not necessarily looking for a role at Amgen or even in biotechnology, you know, look at those lists and get on LinkedIn and see, you know, if you can find their military recruiter, veteran advocate.
This is a different format for the podcast today. Usually I meet one-on-one with a military veteran to learn about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. However, today I'm honored to share with you a different format, and that is we held a panel with Amgen back in June. We had over 40 people sign up as part of this live video seminar where they could join, interact with the panelists, ask questions, and get specific advice. And the three panelists we had all have very different roles at Amgen. They have very different military experiences, and it was great to get their variety of perspectives on common challenges that military veterans see experience in the workforce. So I wanted to share this seminar format with you so you can benefit from their fantastic advice, but also wanted to use this as we have more video seminars to encourage you to join live. It's a great chance to join by video, see other members of the Beyond the Uniform community, as well as make sure that your personal questions are answered by the panelists. Very, very grateful for Bree, Troy, and Mariella. I'll get into more of their background as part of the recording. But with that, let's dive in to this broadcast of the Amgen seminar. All right. Awesome. So very excited to be trying this video format. Curious to hear everyone's thoughts and very, very appreciative of Bree, Troy, and Mariella for joining me today. The overall agenda for the next 87 minutes is I'm going to do a very abbreviated bio for our three guests. I'm going to ask each of them just one or two questions to kick things off. And then I'd love to, I've got a long list of questions I want to make sure I get through. I've had questions that people have emailed me that I want to make sure we get through, but I'd love to try to keep this a little bit more interactive. And so rather than waiting until the very end for your questions, feel free to just throughout either use the chat pane or raise your hand, and I'll try to mix it up so it's not just this long monologue of me asking questions. So I hope we're all good. And so let me just read the abbreviated bios. So first of all, we've got Bree Cameron. Bree was featured in episode 252. She's based in Findlay, Ohio, and she is the Veteran Employment Program Manager at Amgen, where she's worked for over 2 years. She started out in the Navy as a photographer's mate and has been in talent acquisition for over 7 years. She has a master's degree in Engaged Humanities and the Creative Life from Pacific Graduate Institute and a bachelor's in Liberal Studies from Bowling Green State University. Also joining us is Troy Knapp, who's based in San Francisco, California. He's a talent acquisition senior manager at Amgen, where he's worked for nearly 9 years. He served in the Marine Corps for 8 years and has worked at Bank of America, Transamerica, Aon Hewitt, and more. He holds a BA in behavioral neurosciences from the University of Colorado, very close to where I'm at right now in Denver, and an MA in organization development from John F. Kennedy University. And he's currently working on his EDD in organizational leadership at the University of California, San Diego. And Mariella Quirk is based in Tampa, Florida. She's a project manager at Amgen, where she's worked for nearly 2 years. She's served for 20 years in the Air Force, did her undergrad at Trident University International, and has an MBA from the University of Maryland. So I'm just appreciating and reading all of that. We have diversity in branch of service. We have diversity in length of service. We have diversity in the roles that they do at Amgen. So I think we've got a really good group here today to kind of cover the bases. So first question I have for you all is if there's anything you want to add to that bio, anything that any other flavor about your background, your experience in the military, or anything you want listeners to know.
So I have a couple of things I can add to mine. Yes. So in addition to my service, I'm also married to an active duty military as well. So he's coming up on 27 years. So we spent the majority of our careers military to military. And with that, we've been stationed overseas probably over half the time, 20 years. So just a couple extra tidbits.
That's great. That's great. So you've got a combined nearly 40 years of military experience, and you've got the experience both of significant other and as military members. So that'll be great.
Yes.
Troy, anything to add? Oh, hold on. Sorry, Troy, we got to unmute you. Hold on. Okay, try one more time. Oh, wait, it's still muted. Hold on. Technical difficulties.
I think we should be good now.
There we go. We got it.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I think the first thing I would say is I would give a shout out for standardized military testing, because when I went through the ASVAB myself in 86, 87, it came back and said Troy should be a recruiter. And so you fast forward close to 30 years and right here we are. So there's nothing awesome. To be said. Yeah, there's what we said about that. I think one of the things I'd like to add is just that when you're making that transition, you're going to find that the options available to you are so much more numerous and plentiful than you ever would have possibly thought. Mm-hmm. Right. So just have a very open mind as you go through this. I had a pretty open mind as I made my transition into business, and it worked out really well.
That's great. That's great. And excuse me, just one. So this is a very bad choice. Drinking a carbonated beverage, carbonated water on a live recording is going to be, I'm going to have to mute myself, I think. So for those of you who just joined, I know we had a lot of people join since the intro. I've got my questions to go through. I've got questions that people emailed me, but I really want to prioritize your questions for being on this live. And so as you have questions, feel free to enter them into the chat pane. I just entered in one message so you could all see that. And also just feel free to raise your hand. There's an option at the bottom under, should be something like participants, where you'll see it says raise hand, and I'll see that and I can unmute you and you can ask your question. But okay, so first question, Troy, is for you. And that is, before we dive into the particulars, could you just give us some context for what is Amgen?
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the chance to just kind of talk about Amgen for a second. And I also appreciate the partnership between our organizations as we work to bring veterans into the corporate world. Amgen is one of the world's leading biotechnology companies. It's a value-based company. It's deeply rooted in science and innovation. And it's really there to transform new ideas and discoveries into medicines for patients with serious illness. Amgen as an organization has made a decision to focus on the most serious and grievous of human illnesses. You may have seen some of our products advertised here or there. If you've seen Blythe Danner on TV, she does advertisements for us for osteoporosis inflammation drugs. We also have Jack Nicklaus, the famous golfer, that does some representation for us in terms of psoriatic arthritis. Amgen does cover multiple modalities. We have medications in hematology, oncology, bone health, nephrology, neuroscience, cardiovascular, and information. It's a very large company. We're about $22.5 billion annual revenue, and our worldwide employee base is just under 20,000 at 19,800 and something from the last report that I took a look at. Mm-hmm. The thing I like about Amgen, I'll tell you this, is their mission statement. You know a lot about companies by what they put out for their mission statement, and the Amgen mission statement is very simple: to serve patients. And that's it.
That's great. So. And just one thing I'll call out is that one of the themes in, we're up to 293 episodes, not all of them have been released, but in those 293 interviews, a trend that you've probably heard on the show is that most people in the military, whether they realize it or not, they really appreciate a strong sense of purpose while serving. And that is most often one of the voids, often unexpected, that veterans face when they transition out. And so when Troy is describing this strong sense of purpose, the strong mission, that's something to really consider, because it can fill that void for you and contributing to something greater than yourself or trying to achieve something more than just your own personal ambitions. So that's great. So I'll pose this question, and Mariella, Bree, Troy, feel free to choose whoever answers this. But one thing that has come up on interviews is that a lot of service members struggle to find their tribe when they leave the military. And I wonder if you could tell listeners more about Amgen's Veteran Employment Network.
Could we give like a three-level approach to that? Because yeah. I have a view on it. Bree has a view on it.
Yeah, let's have all three. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Amgen, as an organization, is very good in what we call employee affinity groups. The free tip is most large organizations have employee affinity groups like this. And you can imagine they cover a myriad of things. There's an affinity group for the Veterans Network, usually for the African-American Network, the LGBT community, the Asian community. This kind of goes on and on, right? Amgen has a very robust Amgen Veterans Employee Network, and it's a group of Amgen people that have come together. We generally have executive sponsor. Our sponsor on this one is at the VP level, and the purpose of this group really is to bring together veterans in a constructive way so we can support each other, not only through our working environment, but in other ways that we need as well. We have numerous chapters of these. We have them in Thousand Oaks, our San Francisco location, our Boston location, our Rhode Island location, our Puerto Rico location. And so these are really good groups to get involved with if you have the opportunity. We have a fantastic one here. And the relationship that we have as a talent acquisition partnership team with them, I think, is really critical in filling these positions. I think I'd like to turn it over to Bree to kind of talk about this for a second, because she's really developed the strong partnerships that we have with these sort of affinity networks. And she can probably talk a little bit about how you can make those relationships as well.
Right. Yep. So since I work remotely, so I don't sit in one of our offices, but I work closely with all of our, all the different groups at each one of our locations, our veteran network networking groups. And, you know, matter of fact, today, I have, what I'll do is I'll send over resumes from different candidates who I'm working with, and I'll get feedback from people in these affinity groups about what they think about their experience, and, you know, who in that area I can send their resume to, or if they have suggestions on how to reword their resume, you know, I'll pass those suggestions along to the candidate. Trying to think what else, but it's a really good, I use them a lot for networking. And anyone, I see some familiar names on here. So anyone who's worked with me in the past will know that I'm always trying to match someone up with maybe another veteran within our company, to kind of guide them. Since they maybe worked, you know, directly in that office, they're going to know the way things work. You know, Mariella, you know, I go to you a lot for, you know, I'll give you resumes of different candidates. But that's how I best utilize our veteran network. And they're so helpful, and they definitely want to see more veterans come into the company as well. So, you know, not just for Amgen, but maybe any company is trying to find other veterans who work at that company, because I think we all kind of stick together anyway, whether we served directly together or not, but you just kind of feel that connection with other service members. So trying to find other service members who work at the company that you desire, I think that would be a great, you know, tip to pass along.
So to piggyback off of Bree's comments, so she's done a fantastic job in helping us get up and get started. And one of the things that I found when I first started here is right before we started our AVEN group, that there were quite a few different veterans that had also been hired And it's funny because we just started finding each other on our own. And then when Bree came in, we started actually formalizing it. It's a great resource, one for networking to get different things or work or tasks done. And it's funny because then you find a camaraderie around. It doesn't matter what service or how long different people have been in. So it's just a great resource to have. And there's a lot of people that are recently getting out of the military because we have the base like right down the street. So it's a great connection, and it's for a lot of people when they're transitioning out. It's a good resource because a lot of things are going to be very different from what they were used to in the military.
That's great.
Can I add something to that? I think it's really interesting because we were talking about the, I think you said kind of finding your tribe, right? And these veteran affinity things run through the entirety of organizations. I'll give you an Amgen example. Amgen has had two CEOs so far that were Submariners. So you can imagine we have a couple of vice presidents that have been in that Submariner community as well, right? They tend to hang together. We have a former Surgeon General that sits on staff here at Amgen. So from the very executive level on down, there's a real focus on bringing veterans into the organization. And I don't know, but I'd go out on a limb and suspect that if you were to maybe take a survey of the Fortune 100 organizations, you would probably find little distinct pockets of these veterans sitting very high in the organizations.
I think this is great. And, you know, there's that advantage to not being the guinea pig. There's an advantage to working with an employer and colleagues who know a little bit about your background. And I just want to, especially for those of you who are on active duty, when I was on active duty, it was definitely like I was Navy and that's what I knew and that's kind of what I gravitated towards. My experience has been once you get out, it's just kind of military. It doesn't really, no one really cares. A lot of my very good friends from grad school always would introduce me as their Army friend. So clearly no one really cares about it. And so having those other veterans there, regardless of their background, they know 99% more about you than most people. And they've worked with people like you. They're able to get you plugged in. They're able to help with your resume, all these things that Bree was talking about. So I think that's really fantastic.
I would add to that in terms of like that mentorship that I totally forgot where I was going with that one. Let's drop it.
Well, as it comes back, you got to buy it.
I'm pulling the chute on this whole one right there. Yeah.
Another thing that I wanted to ask about was, and Bree, you had talked about that you're working remotely, and I'm particularly thinking of military spouses, but I'm wondering, are there remote work opportunities?
We do have some remote opportunities within Amgen. There are some contractor roles that allow you to work from home or work remotely. I would say our sales positions, obviously, we have, and sales is our highest veteran percentage within Amgen is in sales, but we have those all over the country. But we have regional medical liaisons, and that is one of the few positions that is able to work remotely directly, you know, from the beginning. In other cases, I think it's a case-by-case basis where for different circumstances, depending on your job, you can eventually be allowed to work remotely. But a lot of times you have to be a high performer and, you know, vital to the company. But I do work with a lot of spouses and, you know, there are, it's usually a case-by-case basis. It depends on the situation. But sometimes we can work through that together.
You're not selling yourself so well there, Bree. What she failed to mention in that entire story was, in fact, she had put together an event on the MacDill Air Force Base and met the wife of a service member, and that wife now sits on my staff as a recruiter down in Tampa. So, like, we do find roles for military spouses. Yeah,
quite we obvious. Do. Yeah.
Awesome. I have a question for Mariella about PMP, but I just want to say after that, I'll get to Kendrick, your question, and others as you have questions. Go ahead and populate the chat pane or raise your hand, and I'll start to intersperse some of your questions with mine. So Mariela, one thing I wanted to ask you about is you're in a project management position, and a lot of our audience asks about certification and things like that. And I'm wondering, how critical is it to have a PMP when you're in a project management role?
So I think the most important thing about having the certification is making sure you have the knowledge and the experience that goes behind it. It's not just about the piece of paper, and it's not just being able to say, hey, I know that this is in theory supposed to happen. It's being able to work through all those different situations and still deliver the project on time. So experience is very, very important. It's more important than the paper. The paper is just, it just documents what you've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard.
Can I say something about that? I think it's really interesting is that, especially as a lot of service members are getting out, they're deciding what kind of education they want to get involved in, how they're going to want to use their GI Bill, like those sort of things. And quite honestly, what the studies show is that if you're entering the employment market, that you'll do better in terms of salary appreciation with certificates than you do with additional degrees. Mm. So if the question is it better to run out and get my master's in whatever or a couple of specialized PMP, PMI sort of certifications, from my 20 years of experience of doing this and watching hiring, you might be better off thinking about those certifications over the degree if you want to maximize your income potential.
That's great. I hadn't realized that. And what I appreciate about what you said, Mariela, is my experience in the military was oftentimes the certification or the paper mattered. And I can think of, you know, if you had a certain degree, you know, it was a check in the box, but that would be a reason for promotion. And what I hear from what you're saying is the importance of the knowledge. Like, it really isn't just about checking a box. It is about a depth of experience. And at least my experience in the military, I came out with a different perception. So I think that's great that you call that out.
On our side in the corporate world, there are no like handlers, if you will, sort of taking care of that case. And what Mariela said there is exactly true.
Great.
Right. Yeah.
Let me take two questions from the group. Let me actually start with Josette. So Josette asked, can you tell us about the job role for regional medical liaison?
So Troy, you might know more about it than I do, but
you brought it up. You can talk about it.
So I don't have much experience with these roles, but I know that a lot of times they're looking for someone with an MD or a nursing background. They're very clinical, and I'm trying to think how to explain what they do. I would need to pull up their job description on the
I think Bree's on a good point, because it is those regional jobs. If you are looking for something that has the opportunity for virtuality, right, if we want to call that, I think some companies at this point are calling it home shored, like mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And so the things that have regional titles for us generally sit within a region, right? That's why they call it regional. So the regional RMS, right, the regional medical director, is a person that sits within that territory and is really an expert liaising with the physicians and the doctors and the salespeople in terms of being like the on-duty expert, I think is what the military term might be, right, yeah, for the products that we're using in that specific territory. So if you're coming out of the military and you have a medical background, a nursing background, maybe you're a corpsman, that sort of thing, you know, those are possibilities for us to talk about.
Great. And I have a quick disclaimer for everyone. We have mostly military veterans or people on active duty. We do have some non-military members here. It was actually a surprise. I got an email from someone today and I forwarded it to Steve. I'm like, oh, we have non-veterans coming to this, which I think is awesome. So I just want to call that out if some of the questions seem not in line with the military veteran perspective. I'll start with Kendrick's second question. He asked, does Amgen hire fresh PhD students in science fields into the positions of project manager, operation manager, strategic planning, observational region manager, et cetera?
Those are a lot of big titles. If it's a recent PhD, at least the way it works for us, and it works like this for most big companies as well, you want to look at the basic qualifications. And so if you presented to me as an applicant and I was looking at your paperwork as though I was a recruiter here at Amgen and I saw that you had a PhD in something, my mind is really kind of thinking like, what is your specific therapeutic area? And maybe you might want to be a scientist or a senior scientist or something like that. Those other titles that were read off, yes, you meet the basic qualifications for those sort of roles. And so we would definitely encourage you to apply to them. You really want to pay attention to what those preferred qualifications in the job description sort of talk about, because that's really the meat of what we're getting at. And, you know, it's all subjective. If you look at it and it feels like you're 70% of the way there or something like that, yeah, I would highly encourage you to apply, most definitely.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Awesome. I'm going to insert one question, then I'll go back to the questions in the chat pane. So one question I had for you, Bree, is if you could discuss the civilian hiring process, like how to translate a resume, how to interview, the importance of networking, targeting roles. I know there's a lot there, but I also know that's kind of very much in your wheelhouse.
Right. Yep. Yeah. So this is going to be a long answer, just so that you're all prepared for that. So first of all, with translating a resume, I would say some of the mistakes that I see, currently transitioning veterans make is their resume is too long. So I tell people have two versions of your resume, because I don't want to discredit anything that you've done in the military. And I did this as well. I had a long resume that I pretty much wrote down every single thing that I had done in the military. Included all my awards, all of that. So I suggest have a long version of your resume to take with you to the interview. But when you're submitting an application, have a short version of your resume that's targeted for that role. And the biggest mistake I see, and I think I talked about this on the podcast, was consolidating all of your experience under just your branch of service. So I was in the Navy. So instead of what I did at first, which was I broke it down by each ship that I was on, each shore command that I was on. And, you know, years later, I realized nobody was going to know what that meant. You know, nobody knows what PSD means in the civilian world. Nobody knows what USS Ronald Reagan means in the civilian world. So just put it all under the United States Navy. If you want to break it down by command after that, but as long as it's clear. Because as you all know, when you're in the military, you're bouncing around from one position to the other every, 2 to 3 years. A civilian hiring manager is going to look at your resume and think, you know, why were they moving, from jobs, they're a job hopper moving every 2 to 3 years. I can't trust that they'll be loyal to the company and stick around for a while. So I'm not going to invest my time. Also, civilians are looking for, or non-military are looking for, familiar companies. So in our case, at Amgen, hiring managers may be looking for people who have worked for, Pfizer or Merck or Bristol-Myers Squibb or other pharmaceutical companies. If they see, SOCOM, they're not gonna know what that is. It's not familiar. They're gonna dismiss it. And that brings me to another point, which is spelling out acronyms. So SOCOM stands for, Special Operations Command. So making sure that you're clear on, or spelling those out and making it clear what that command did. So for instance, I worked at Fleet Imaging Command when I was in the Navy, and really it was like a media, hub. We had the photographers there, journalists there, combat camera was there. We printed photos there. So how can I put that into civilian terms that hiring managers would understand? Another thing I would do is have a civilian look at your resume and point out, highlight any military jargon that may be hidden in there that you're not even aware of. I still, to this day, have been out for 12 or 13 years now, and I'll catch myself saying things or, talking about things that I didn't realize weren't common to the civilian world.
Duncan boogie bait, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I still say I'm taking leave instead of I'm going on vacation. So having a civilian look it over and pointing out, asking, what does this mean? I don't know what that means. Because sometimes you don't even realize that you're doing it. And then the biggest thing is targeting your resume. So like what Troy said, that's the advice I give to every single veteran candidate I talk to, is to make sure that you meet 100% of the basic quals and 75% at least of the preferred qualifications. Because like Troy said, those preferred qualifications, that's the wish list that the hiring manager, you know, has. That's what they really want. They won't, they're going to pick the person that can check off the most of those bullet points in that, for those preferred qualifications. So make sure that, this is where the short resume, you want to make sure it's targeted for that role that you're applying to. So there's the resume. Next was interview. You were asking about interview prep. I would say that one of the things I started to pick up on early on when I started this position was that, and I had done this for years and never realized it, was all of us who've served in the military, we were used to being given a task and with no training. And it was basically you had to figure it out, and you had to figure it out right away, and you had to do it without messing up. And we eventually become experts at doing that to the point where, you know, where it just becomes natural to us. So I think a lot of us have that mindset. So when you're looking at a job description, and I did this at least a dozen times before I found a job, was I was applying to roles just because they sounded fun and I knew I could do it, but not necessarily because I had the experience. So making sure that, you know, in the civilian world, they want to see what you have done, not what you think you can do, because we all know that we can do it, but what have you actually done? Because they're looking for someone who's already done these things.
This is a topic that Bree and I run across all of the time.
All the time.
We have, you know, corporals, sergeants getting out kind of after one tour, and they're with a very straight face applying for like the executive vice president role, because you can kind of like do anything that you need. Well, you have to have some corporate experience before we can get you there, right? We need to get you into the door in a different spot than that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I come across that a lot. So also, that's a good point, Troy, is knowing what the different levels are, what the rank is in the civilian world. So if you see something that says executive or VP or director, you know that that's probably, you know, do you have the experience to back it up? And that's where, you know, understanding how to read a job description comes into play.
Let me chime in here because a while back, Brian Phillips had written in the chat pane. I think his question is actually really relevant to this, and I want to make sure we dive in a little bit deeper. So what Brian wrote was, it would be good to hear if there are specific types of roles that are well-suited for transitioning military members. Does it fall into buckets such as 5 years or 20 years of service and any associated skills that are critical to develop for these roles or to make yourself competitive? And I know there's a lot there, but when you started to go down that role of breaking, or that road of breaking down EVP and things like that, do you see any trends in terms of length of service or anything like that that correlates to these seniority levels or into specific functional roles?
I would love to jump on Bree's microphone and because I have some
video. No, go ahead. Yeah.
I think one of the really interesting learnings for myself as we came in and started to develop these sort of veterans advocacy programs and put them into place is that we found veterans were very sort of narrowed thinking in how they were self-selecting for roles. And Amgen is and here's what I mean by that. Amgen is a $22+ billion your annual revenue company. We have one of everything, right? I have a position open right now for a senior pilot because we have a fleet of corporate aircraft that need to be flown. I have pilot airplane manufacturing jobs. I have finance jobs. If you've been in disbursement, if you've been in supply chain, you've never seen supply chain like biotechnological cold supply chain, right? Pretty much whatever you were doing in the military, there's a role someplace that we're going to be able to find for you. You really don't want to. Now that 5-10 year thing, I think that kind of goes to the experience. If you're coming out of the service, the Army, and you know, 12-13 years, you're a staff NCO, now we're talking about probably a higher level of role that you might be getting into at the manager level or something like that, as opposed to like maybe an associate role or something if you're coming out after just one tour or something. So it's kind of about putting it into the right level, but mostly just have a real open mind, because if you've done it, like almost every big company as a job for you, right?
Right. Yeah, and if I can add to that, Troy, you reminded me. So I think one of the things I see people struggle with when we're trying to find them the right fit is, you know, in the military, we're all in charge of someone, you know, no matter what your rank is, you're always kind of in charge of the ranks below you. So I think a lot of us come out, and I know I did this as well. You know, I was looking for supervisory positions when I got out of the military or something in management. We don't, you know, a lot of the civilians, companies that aren't structured that way. You know, there's one boss for many people versus, you know, you kind of report to the person that outranks you, or there's a lot of different managers. So I would say a lot of people are looking for some sort of management or leadership role. And instead of they want to manage people versus managing a project. So you have to be aware of that there may not be a lot of those types of roles available. Another thing, and this is advice that I've received from people internally, is that maybe they were shooting for that management or director role, but they didn't have the experience in biotech. So, you know, taking maybe a step down so that they can learn and master that part of our business, and learning our processes and our products and our you know, biotech in general, and then working their way back up to that management role. And honestly, I've seen a lot of veteran promotions within Amgen, and I think that, you know, our ability to adapt so quickly has a lot to do with that.
So. That's great. And I realized I'd kind of cut you off, Bree, with that other question. I'm just curious if there's anything else you wanted to share about networking or targeting roles or anything else.
Yeah, I would say networking is key. And that's kind of one of the things that we've learned at Amgen is what I found was, you know, we were going to a lot of career events, and we still do. But really, it was when I could somehow get candidates in you know, face-to-face with hiring managers. And the hiring managers were so impressed with the candidates that they were meeting. So we started throwing our own events that we hold on site, and we invite candidates to come on site, and we invite hiring managers to come. We invite our veteran network to come as well to these events. And I would say, honestly, I think we've had three of these events, and we're hiring about like 75% of the candidates who show up. And those numbers don't even compare to the events that we're going to. So, you know, try to get in front of people as best as you can, because, mm-hmm. you know, and this is something that I didn't realize till later on and started working more closely with non-military, you know, trying to hire veterans, is that they all kind of have this preconceived notion that veterans are usually, you know, 21 years old, went into the military right after high school, and don't have a degree. So I'm constantly debunking myths about that and explaining to them the difference between, you know, enlisted and officer, and how about 40% of the veteran population has a degree. Because a lot of us, like me, you know, utilized the education benefits that we received, you know, our tuition assistance, the MGI bill, the post 9/11 bill, and a lot of them, because I would say, you know, I think a veteran would be really great for your role, and I would hear, well, we need someone that has a bachelor's degree, and I'm like, I have plenty of those, you know, candidates with a bachelor's degree. So I think that's really important.
I think Bree is touching on something that's really important here, because she's touching on what is it that the veteran has in terms of what the market might call soft skills that really make them a candidate of choice or employable. And for us as an organization, it's pretty easy. And I think if other organizations think through this, they'd find the same thing, because I think about the Amgen values. Amgen talks about itself as being a values-based organization. And you always know what's important to a company kind of by based on what they paint on their cafeteria walls, right? And so if you're wandering around or walking around the Amgen campus, you'll find these Amgen values kind of painted places, and there's a little, you know, marble statue, and it's etched in the stone and all this kind of stuff. But what we found is once we really started educating managers that these Amgen values are really in line with military values and veteran values, it really closed the sale. Because I'm thinking Amgen values are things like compete intensely and win. Win, well, that sounds kind of familiar, right? Be ethical, ensure quality, work in teams. I love this one. One of our values is collaborate, communicate, and be accountable, which to me kind of sounds like I'm up, he sees me, I'm down. I'm up, he sees me, I'm down, right? So we find that the values the organization professes are very similar to the values that we find people coming out of the military with. And I think once Bree really made that connection with the managers is when this program really broke out for us. And I think it's probably why we've been more successful than some of our competitors in doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
That's great, yeah. Go ahead, Justin.
I'll come back because I'm sure there's more we can mine in this topic, but I want to call out, George brought up something great, which was the imperative for transitioning service members to understand the culture of the prospective employer, so the cultural fit. And I think that's a really good point, regardless of where you're applying. I'm curious, you know, we started down this path with what Troy was saying. What is the culture of Amgen? I know with such a massive organization, it might be hard to provide a succinct answer, but I'm curious, like, how might someone know if this is a good fit for them culturally or might not be a good fit?
I think it's a great question. I would like all three of us to give an answer and see if we're thinking about this the same way, right? Mm-hmm. Because we all work here. It's kind of the joke of the site.
We all work at different sites. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we'll look at it kind of a different way. Two things I think I'd like to start off with. I think whatever the culture is, making a transition from the military into a corporate position is incredibly disorienting, right? And that's part of why you want to have your tribe, if we want to call that put together. I'll think about my own experience, and Bree and I have kind of conversed about this. My first corporate job was in financial services. So I showed up my very first day out of the service in a very neatly pressed, you know, black suit, red tie, white shirt, the whole thing, right? And I was immediately standing in a room filled with people dressed exactly like me. And I couldn't tell who was important, right? There was no stripes on the sleeve or rank on the collar to let me know who was who relative. There was no medals on the chest. So I knew like what you have done with your career kind of thing. And it was really disorienting to kind of be in that. So finding organizations that have values that match yours will probably help alleviate that disorientation, because it's something that we find very common with veterans. So having said that, when candidates ask me what the culture is like at Amgen, I tell them that I'm very careful in how I choose my words. And I will say that I really find the culture here at Amgen to be relaxed, right? I'm not calling it a casual culture. I'm going to call it a relaxed culture. And here's what I mean by that. It's a very professional organization. They're not doing crisis by management. You know, my staff will tell you, we don't send emails to each other at midnight, urgent action required now with capitals, that kind of stuff that you see. And because of that, it's just a very nice and humane place to work. And what tells me it's a humane place to work is if we look at some, and I think this is a good test. I think if you're looking at an organization and you're wondering, is this a place that has employee values at heart or not? This is a good test. You kind of want to look at the ancillary benefits that those companies give. And I'll give an example. So Amgen has one we call the Milk Stork Program. And it's a program, if you're a mother, you have a child, you go off on maternity leave, you come back. Generally, you're working while you're still breastfeeding the child. And so if you're traveling on business, Amgen sends a styrofoam, you know, cooler with dry ice in it to whatever location you're at. So you can, you know, pump the breast milk, they take it back, freeze dry it for you, right? And then send it back to your house so you have it for you. That's an organization saying, I'm going to try to take care of you, right? And then you want to look at things like, what are they doing for tuition reimbursement? What are they doing for adoption reimbursement? It's those kind of ancillary things where you really get an idea if an organization is putting their money and thought into caring for the employees or not.
That's great. Mariella, what would you say?
Okay, for this one, I agree with a lot of the points that Troy made. The one thing that I think that each service member should look at as they're looking for different positions is first they need to take a hard look at themselves and what they value and what makes them happy. So I think like while you're in the military, you do what you need to do and you're used to doing what you need to do. But then when you have the opportunity to look, because you can choose your employment anywhere. It's not, you're not bound by contract anymore. So you should look for something that aligns with your values and that makes you happy. And Amgen, the culture at Amgen, I greatly appreciate it. It's a very collaborative environment. There's rank structures, but it's not like in the military where it's like, oh, if you're in this position, you don't have a voice. You have a voice. And if you see something, you're expected to still speak up. So, and they listen to your point of view, which is, I think, great. Because not every company does that. A lot of times they'll look at, oh, what level are you or what position are you? Okay, well,
we're not going to listen. Yeah.
Because we're talking about rank structure, I think it's a really interesting point, and this is something else that Bree's kind of educated me on, is I think most veterans will find when they come into a corporate organization that the rank structure they're used to, like, gets really flat. And here's what I mean by that, right? You have in the military E1 to E9, 9 of those. You've got your warrant officers, there's 4 of those. You've got O1 to O10, there's 10 of those. That's a lot of ranks to get through, right? For an organization like Amgen, from custodian to CEO, it is basically 8 job grades. You only have to get promoted 8 times. You can run the whole thing.
That's great. And I love, before we get to Bree, Mariel, I love what you said about the importance of uncovering your own values, which I think is a very, it's a great point that I hadn't thought of. And I think it's really important to evaluate the values of the company you're thinking of joining, but it's only helpful in so much as you have taken the time to uncover your own values. And I know that when we used to emphasize a lot, we had a coaching program at Beyond the Uniform with executive coaches. That was like the number one piece of feedback I got was like, man, what we focus on for the first couple calls is really uncovering their values, which is something that you can do throughout your life because they do change over time. And I think that a lot of listeners or viewers, seminar attendees would be surprised at, you know, if someone asked you, like, what are your values, it might be harder than you would think to uncover those. But the more you know those, the easier it is to see if an organization aligns with that. Bree, what would you add about that, about the cultural fit?
So Troy and Mariella both said a lot of what I would say, but I would say that the thing that really sticks out to me is the collaboration, just kind of how everyone works together. Everyone's kind of looking out for everyone else, and how there's this mission to help people. I mean, that's what Amgen's all about, is helping people. And even our CEO, and this isn't a direct quote, but even our CEO has said, you know, it makes sense that those who have served our country would naturally do well at serving patients. And that's how he feels about veterans working for Amgen. And I think that one of the things I like about working for Amgen is that, you know, probably the first time since I've been out of the military is that I have that purpose-driven, you know, experience that you have when you're in the military. Is just every day is meaningful, and you have that purpose that you're working for. And that's kind of how it feels at Amgen, is because you're making such a difference in people's lives, and you know, and it feels good. So I would say that, you know, if you miss the military culture, you know, I think Amgen would be a good fit because for that reason. So
that's great. I have a question here from Jason that he put in the chat pane. He said, I've noticed that Amgen is consistently recognized as a top veteran employer of choice year over year. With so many companies attempting to hire veterans, what does Amgen do differently that makes them so successful at hiring such a large amount of veterans?
That's an easy question to answer because I have a Bree.
Thanks for asking. No, but I mean, okay, I'm not tooting my own horn here, but to your point, Troy, I would say that that is important. Obviously, Amgen cares enough to have someone in my role who's completely dedicated to hiring veterans. So what I've told, what I tell people who don't live anywhere near an Amgen facility, or they're not necessarily looking for someone who's or they're not looking to get into biotechnology. I do veterati mentorship sometimes. So this is the advice I give a lot of them is, you know, get on the military.com best for vets list, you know, get on the recruit military, military friendly employers list. Look at those companies, and most likely, because those surveys are brutal, they're so long and there's so many questions, and so if they cared enough to fill out that survey, they probably have someone like me who's dedicated, you know, to doing those types of things. And most of those companies that are on those two lists or any of those lists, I know for a fact have dedicated military recruiters. So if you're not necessarily looking for a role at Amgen or even in biotechnology, you know, look at those lists and get on LinkedIn and see, you know, if you can find their military recruiter, veteran advocate within the company. And I think that's
my friend Jordan will hate me. My friend Jordan will hate me for saying this, but like if you go to LinkedIn and type in Caterpillar and Veterans Advocate, his picture comes up, his name comes up. It's so easy to find these people, and you want to reach out to them because they want to help you. They want to help you get into these organizations.
Right. That's my whole, my job is to get you hired if you're a veteran. So yeah, look for people with a similar title as mine, I would say.
I might add, because we have been quite successful with the program, I would say. And I would add just organizationally that the fact that we have very strong and consistent executive support around these sort of programs.
That too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really helps drive this. And so I'll sometimes I do career coaching. I'm going to give away the free bit of advice here, right? And the reason why this executive level support is just really so critical is that when you get into the business world, here's what you're going to learn. And this is a real golden nugget. So you can take this one. Hardly anybody will ever kick you upstairs. And here's what I mean by that, right? Hardly anybody, it's just not human nature, if they get a hold of your background, says, oh, this is really interesting, you should talk to my boss about this. It kind of doesn't work that way so much, right? But Bree will know. I get resumes all the time and I'm like, oh, Bree, hey, you should take a look at this, right? Mm-hmm. And now Bree's on the hook because I'm going to come back and ask her later. Find these veterans advocates in the organization and try to use them because they want to help you. And you know, don't be at all. I think it's kind of a natural military thing because we have a real rank structure kind of attitude in our mind. Right? I got to talk to the corporal, talk to the sergeant, talk to this down. You know, like, right? It doesn't work that way in our corporate world. In fact, if you come into our offices, we don't even really have walls, right? It's an open office environment. And like literally, Bree knows, she sits at a table and she can look right up and she sees the vice president of the delivery office that's responsible for our veterans
program. Whenever I'm in the office.
Right. Mm-hmm. So like in an egalitarian way, like, you know, you used to have to go talk to the secretary and get past her and get an appointment, and it doesn't even work that way in most of these corporate organizations now. We're all just sitting around in big rooms in a very collaborative way. Mm-hmm. So you know, be willing to kind of reach up. And I think you also asked kind of that question around the career coaching. How does the process work for the candidate? If I have a second, I wouldn't mind going down that path because I think it's useful. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. I can't speak for all organizations, but I can tell you this. So if you had applied to a role at Amgen, say you just went in and applied, you know, online, you go to our website tonight and apply, which if you want a job, I highly encourage you to do. So in the morning, the recruiter gets that resume. At Amgen, it's human eyeballs, right, that look at your resume. And what that recruiter is doing is he sat down or she sat down and they read the job description, and now they're looking at the resumes, and they're kind of just looking through them to see what sort of matches up, right? Because if you're right for the job, your background should look a lot like that job description. And the ones that look, you know, kind of interesting for a phone call get put over here, and everybody else, right? And then we'll call up those ones that were interested, that kind of looked interesting enough for a phone call, and find out what the story is a little bit deeper, right? And at that point, we might invite you in for an interview, or we might, you know, it might not be the position for you. But I think the important takeaway there is, if you want your paper at least to be noticed, right, you really do have to target it in the way that Bree's saying in relation to that job that you're trying to apply for. because otherwise it just doesn't make any sense, right? Ultimately, that's who a company wants to hire, is the person doing almost the exact similar job for the closest competitor down the street, right? So we're looking for kind of those similarities. And those keywords do become important. I will say, as you get into other Fortune 100 organizations, very often the first eyeballs that actually look at the paper might not be based in the United States, right? A lot of that work is done offshore, in places where they have great education and speak English and all of these sort of things, right? Some companies are now reverting to algorithms and computers and stuff like that. And so in that case, those words that match up become very important. Here at Amgen right now, we still have people that like read every single one. So you send your resume and Bree might take a look at it tomorrow.
That's awesome. One question I had in the chat pane was from Josette. She said, I understand that you have many events and how important it is to get in front of people, but what are your thoughts for those of us who are not based in California?
Come to our Tampa event, come to our Rhode Island event, come to our Puerto Rico event. Where else are we? Are we going to Texas this year, Bree?
No, not this year. Right. But yeah, Josette, I would give you the same advice about, you know, I'm not sure where you're located, but if you're not located near an Amgen facility, or if you're trying to relocate again, you know, that's where Texas. Okay. Sorry. Perfect. I would, if you are trying to relocate, I would, you know, get in touch with me, and that's when it becomes my job to maybe not physically get you in front of someone, but I can at least get your resume in front of them. I can at least get you to talk to hopefully another veteran or recruiter or a hiring manager about your experience. And if it's not Amgen that you're looking into, that's when I would refer you back to the advice of, you know, get on LinkedIn and try to find other people with my title at companies. Who can maybe do the same thing for you.
Great.
Can I say something about that relocation thing? Mm-hmm. Because it comes up a lot for us when we're dealing with our veteran population. Not exactly sure why, but I really see it very often when we're dealing with these veteran populations coming out. They have benefit inside of these organizations. If we're going to move you, there's relocation benefit, all these sort of things. And we find that very often the recent veteran candidates sort of like are trying to almost deny that, right? Like they feel like if they're asking for the extra stuff, maybe they won't get the job or something. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, if you're working with other companies, if they're putting benefit on the table, they're putting benefit on the table because they like you. And like, don't talk yourself out of some relocation benefits or other benefits because you're, you know, trying to work with the company in a way or negotiate that you think is going to strengthen your position. The economy's doing well. The Fortune 500 companies are great. They can take care of your relocation if they offer it to you. Like, you know, take all those benefits. They're yours. You really want to take them.
A question I had for Mariella was around if you could comment on the perceptions that some employers may have of what a veteran has experience or what they should look like.
Yes. So this is one that I encountered in different ways. So one of the first ways I encountered it was during my interview. So the interview was going great, and I thought I was knocking all the answers out of the ballpark. And then, so what I did while I was in the military, so I was a systems administrator, so answering all the questions, explained my experience, so it was good. And then at the end, they're like, well, that sounds really, really good, but what kind of civilian IT systems have you worked with? And I was like, oh my gosh, they have no idea. It's the exact same systems. So the whole time I was going through it, they seemed to be liking me, which ultimately I ended up getting the job, which was great. But then that was like one of the first encounters that I had. It's like, oh, like I shouldn't just assume that they know what I've dealt with. Mm. A lot of times they thought that it was like tailored or specialized. And I've worked with some items that have been specialized, but that wasn't one of them. Mm. So that was one perception. And it's been interesting. And then another perception or another thing that I got hit with a lot, especially as I joined Amgen, was many, many people were surprised that when I was a woman veteran, which to me was like, of course I'm a veteran. And then the way the conversation would usually go is like, oh, hey, and then they're like, oh, so your husband's a veteran. Mm. Like, well, my husband's still active duty, yes, but I'm a veteran.
Right.
So that was interesting to me because like in the military, there's a lot more women. It's I guess it's still a minority overall in the military, but it's something that I was used to, and I didn't expect that it would not be seen as much once I got out.
Well, I think also what that speaks to is that the depth of the divide and the depth of the knowledge gap that, like, just like my friend assumed I was in the Army because I was in the military, even though I was in the Navy, like the extreme there of someone not even realizing that women serve in uniform, I think that maybe that sets some sort of stage and foundation for, like, that is the level of lack of understanding that you're dealing with. And so when earlier in the seminar, you were talking about no acronyms and things like that. It's like there is a really big gulf here that you need to bridge, that you need to help people understand what you did in the military. And both of those examples are really compelling that they just don't know.
Yeah. So it's not anything for me to get upset with. It's just something that I have to remember many, many times. And then I guess it's also, I don't carry myself like I was in the military. So I guess I'm not as mean or aggressive. People think that somebody in the military should be.
I get that too. Yeah. Yeah.
I get that. I get that. Military.
You don't look like a
Yeah. Yeah.
Steve. Just interesting and something to keep in mind.
Yep. Steve asked in the chat pane, are there any specific certifications that you require at Amgen?
I think it depends on the position. Not always. And I know that a lot of times military, especially if you're just now transitioning, you're not going to have some of these certifications. And that's when I work with you and other veterans within the company to kind of advocate for you and vouch for your experience rather than your certifications. Kind of like what Mariella was saying earlier is, you know, one thing people don't understand is how condensed dense our experience in the military is. And how much, you know, how maybe 2 years of experience would be equivalent to, you know, 4 years in the civilian world. But yeah, that's usually when I work with people who don't have that certification or maybe only have, you know, an associate's degree versus a bachelor's degree, but they have all this experience from the military. And that's, I work with the recruiters and hiring managers and other internal veterans to kind of help me explain that. To them. But yeah, like I said, it all is specific to the position you're interested in.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think most positions here would not require a specific certification. And obviously, if the job is certified public accountant, then like you probably kind of have to have that certification, right? If the job is project manager, well, that's kind of a preferred thing. And I think Bree does a really good job with explaining how somebody's background alleviates the need to have that as a, you know, kind of requirement coming into it. The free kind of career advice on this one, I think if you go to most large companies and you read over their job descriptions, it's pretty clear. They all have basic and preferred qualifications. It's something that's really driven by some government regulations and hiring, not to go too far down that path. But if you meet the basic qualifications, you meet the basic qualifications. If that basic mm-hmm. qualification is a veterinary certificate and you don't have one and you're not a veterinarian, yeah, you're right, not the one for you. Mm-hmm. Most positions I think we have here probably would not require a specific certification.
Right.
So we have HVAC, like maybe HVAC might, some of the facilities maintenance management positions, maybe some.
Yeah,
things
most
like
of
that.
Those are preferred qualifications. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
awesome. If you just joined as well, feel free to throw any specific questions in the chat pane or hit the raise hand button. Mm-hmm. One question that I'd gotten earlier from Crystal was, what was the most difficult part of returning to your life and family after serving?
Whew. Let me think. That's so long ago for me. I think my biggest thing was I missed my friends so much. I missed that camaraderie. And I think that was something I wasn't expecting when I got out was, you know, that didn't really exist the way, you know, everybody was, I felt you know, kind of, you know, misunderstood, like what Mariella was saying, a lot of the, you know, you were in the military, you don't look like you would have been in the military, and telling stories about of my military, you know, my Navy days, and people looking at me like, that is not true, you know, like thinking I made some of this stuff up. So I think for me, the hardest part about transitioning was the lack of camaraderie, and then the kind of feeling misunderstood or not understood, or I don't know. Does that make sense to you too, that when you were transitioning? And you too, Justin, I mean, that's the thing that sticks out to me the most.
That's great.
I think that's how we all ended up in the reserves, right?
I didn't go into the reserves, so yeah, maybe I should have.
The reserve recruiter had me because he called me right about that 4-month mark where I was saying, oh, that was a lot of fun and great. And maybe I missed it.
I
think Bree's really on something about that kind of out of placeness. I talked about it before. It was really, I know it was something strong for me when I got out and hit the corporate world right away, is just sort of not understanding my place relative to everybody else. Mm-hmm. Communication works much differently in corporations in terms of how transparent you are and how much you talk to your boss's boss, right? And all these sort of things. And something else that was hard for me, and I think this is true for a lot of veterans, is the ability just to kind of slow yourself down, right? When I was medically retired as a Marine Corps sergeant, and like, you know, be careful what you ask a sergeant to do because he'll die trying. And so early on in my corporate career, I found myself kind of going beyond the length of the rope they gave me, so to speak, because in the military, that's exactly what you do. You keep going until the mission is accomplished. Well, the corporate world, there's a lot of compliance rules and legal rules. And so you kind of have to check in a little bit more with people in terms of what you're doing. And so I actually had to kind of rein myself in a little bit and behave more. Less military, I guess, right? Less aggressive, right?
That's a good point, Troy, too, is because I do see some of these veterans, if this is their first job outside of the military, is kind of going to, how do I say this? They're going above and beyond to the point where, like, they're going to exhaust themselves. They really, you know, don't have to do, you know, the amount of work that they're doing.
Right, because we have work-life balance, and people leave at
right,
night.
Exactly. Yeah, they're not used to that. Yeah. Almost like overexerting themselves to where I'm afraid they're going to burn themselves out. But I think that, you know, we're used to working, you know, 12-hour or more shifts, and you know, when you're on deployment, it's constant. And like you said, slowing down and just kind of enjoying that new freedom that you have.
So that's also what I found that was very difficult.
Yeah.
Like I figured out, I was like, oh, maybe I should get a hobby. I have no idea what to do for a hobby. So I went and I got my master's degree.
Right.
So it's like,
A good hobby. Yeah.
But I think that's also where these AVEN groups are really, really good for a lot of the people that recently get out, is to like help, like signal that like you can slow down a bit. It doesn't all have to get done right now.
I think that in AVEN, I'm assuming is Amgen's Veteran Employment Network.
Yes.
But I think that's a great thing that I hadn't thought of as well, as kind of an advantage of having a group like that, is there are certain speed bumps that we all hit in our transition, and that they can help with that. They can help point these things out or help buoy you when you're maybe down from a certain aspect. And kind of leads into a question that George just asked. He said, a question for each panel member is, if you had one do-over for your transition process, what would it be and what lesson did you learn from it?
Who wants to start?
Oh, about the great mistakes? Sure.
Yeah.
You know what, Mariella, you were kind of quick on that one. I'll give that one over to you.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Oh, transition mistakes. Mine weren't that long ago. I think I've been pretty fortunate. Like I met Bree pretty early on and she helped line me up with the job that I wanted, and it's worked out great. But for me, it's pretty much, and this might sound bad, but it was like with the appearance. So I spent 20 years wearing a uniform, doing my hair the exact same way, pulled back in a bun. So I would have taken more time and invested a little bit more money initially So I would feel comfortable. It took a little bit longer to get to where I was comfortable with that corporate look. Because you don't get a whole lot of people that really tell you. They give you like, hey, you should do X, Y, and Z, but that doesn't always fit you. So I'd spend a little bit more time with that.
That's a really good answer.
That is a good answer, yeah.
That's a really good answer. I like that. Yeah.
And so, Mariela, that made me think of, you know, when I was in, you know, tech class, and this was several years ago, and I'm sure a lot's changed since then, but since I was going to college, you know, directly from the military, and, you know, I was going to go full time and just work part time, I didn't pay a lot of attention in tech class, and I think they call it something different now, but so for me, when I finally, you know, graduated with my bachelor's and I was trying to find a non-part-time job, I think one of the things I struggled with was I just, you know, I didn't set myself up very well. So, you know, networking and, you know, I wish I would have done more of those mock interview things that they offered, or, you know, but my college did. And so I think it's, you know, very, you know, stressful to, you know, putting yourself out there and doing things for the first time. But I wish I would have done that sooner, is, you know, utilize some of those tools within the military and at the university I went to help me prepare for, you know, transitioning into the civilian workforce. Because then even after I got my bachelor's degree, I think it took me about 2 years to find a job that I felt was worthy of me. You know, it wasn't a restaurant or a retail job, because that was really, and those were because I was making all the mistakes that I now try to teach everybody not to make, which is not translating things properly on my resume. I'm pretty sure I didn't interview well at all. But you know, I've learned so much over the last, you know, 8 years being in talent acquisition. So, but yeah, I just wish I would have put a little more effort, like you said, Mariela, you know, just kind of taking that time and finding what makes you comfortable, because it does feel like a totally different world, I think, when you first step into a corporate office.
I think Bree says something really important about the timing of it, right? Because in terms of getting out into that first professional engagement, I completely missed the boat on timing, and it would have been a do-over. And here's what I know after, you know, years of being in the industry now at this point, is that if you're looking at a job, like say you go to my website tonight, right? You go to Amgen.com and you're looking at a job there that I just posted. You know, in these corporate worlds, sometimes the time to fill on these jobs are 90, 120 days, something like that. So the idea that you're going to take your exit class, leave the military, and then start to think about getting a job, well, you're 3-6 months behind. I mean, if you're getting out 6 months prior to your exit date is when you really want to start thinking about it, getting a resume put together, doing the LinkedIn, getting your networks kind of set, you know, those sort of things. And like 30 days from getting out, even 60 days from getting out, you really need to have your foot on the gas in terms of getting your applications and your networking and your conversations and your phone calls and all of those sort of things going. Because if not, you're just going to run out of time very quickly.
Right. No, that's a good point. And I see that a lot, Troy, is I'll have people call me who are getting out in, you know, 1 or 2 months. But I also have people come to me about a year and a half before they get out. And I tell people, you know, 6 to 9 months is the perfect time to really start, you know, getting serious, because the hiring process can take so long sometimes, and you're not always going to get that first position that you apply to or interview for, or get a phone screen for. So, you know, but a lot of times I know at Amgen, we can be flexible on your start date. So, you know, getting started earlier, I think that's excellent advice for someone who's getting ready to transition within the next year or so.
And getting a job, right? A good one is really almost a job in and of itself. And I think about this because we do some career coaching, or like that kind of thing, right? And you'll, you know, work with people that say, I'm working really hard. I'm trying to, okay, let me see your emails. And it's like, oh, you sent 4 emails yesterday. you know, are you really trying hard to get a job? And I'll just throw out some numbers that sort of exist in our industry to give you an idea for it. So say you're working with a contingent recruiter, one of these, you know, guys that calls you up, hey, give me your resume, I might have a job for you. Like, that person is making 30 to 60 phone calls a day, right, on trying to secure a job, right, for that candidate. And so if you're doing a job search and you're, you know, sending a couple of emails a day, like, it's not going to happen for you, right? It's a numbers game. You need to be out there bumping into a lot of people. And I think, especially when we come from an environment where we've been handled a little bit, I had military handlers that kind of took care of my careers and promotions and ideas and where I was going to go, right? That doesn't exist so much in the civilian world, and that responsibility really rests on you. And so if you're serious about a job search, you really have to put yourself in the driver's seat and take yourself to a point of going out there and out there and out there until you're like, you're completely uncomfortable and feel like you've gone as far as you can go. And then if you put yourself out there another 20%, you're probably getting close to where you need to be.
That's awesome. I've got a question from Amanda, and I'm embarrassed that I did not do a better job at this at the start, but I'd love to just for each of you to give you space to explain a little bit about your role and what you do at Amgen.
I appreciate it. Okay, great.
Yeah. It's probably pretty obvious. I feel like I've done a lot of talking through this, but yeah, my main purpose, my main, you know, job at Amgen is to work directly with veterans and advocate for them and find them a place at Amgen. And in addition to that, it's also to grow our program and get the word out there that we are a veteran-friendly company. We did the Beyond the Uniform podcast. That was one way, you know, by advertising that on LinkedIn and different social media platforms. So that people
now's your
are
opportunity
aware.
To plug yeah. Vevra. So we're talking about being an employer of choice and our Vevra compliant.
Oh. Yeah. Oh yeah. And so Tampa was so for those of you who don't know what Vevra stands for, it's the Vietnam era readjustment. Oh my gosh.
Education Act.
No, it's you asked me too quickly. The Vietnam era veterans someone help me out here. It's like an assistant act. Anyway, so it's OFCCP, another acronym, where the, you know, government basically mandates that each facility of ours has to be 7% staffed with veterans. In Tampa, we just opened that facility, 2 years ago now? Yeah, 2017. And that was our first Vevra compliance site. I think the Vevra compliance standards at that time were 7.2, and we came in at like 7.6. And we pretty much maintained that percentage since that office has opened. So
we're really driving veterans into these parts of the organization. And if you want to talk about being a veteran-friendly employer, like, we're really going, because I'll tell you, doing that is not an easy thing to do. The amount of effort and time and money and resource that Amgen put into it, and the bajillion flights Bree took and back and forth all over MacDill Air Force Base and everything, it's a lot of work to do that. And it's one of those things, like, because I think that question came up earlier, right? How do you know if the company you're working with kind of has your values and that sort of thing? If you're talking to a company and they can talk about, yeah, we have sites that are Vevra compliant, we have sites that have so many veterans in it, we're getting awards by the government, then you know you're working with an organization that's going to take your veterans issues to heart.
Yeah, Vietnam Era Veterans Readjustment Assistant Act. Thank you, George.
Thank you, George.
Mariella, could you share a little bit more about your role?
Yes, so I am a project manager. Specifically, I do IT projects here at Tampa. And Tampa, it's kind of like a shared services center. So they do IT for all the global sites. It's about, including like contingent workers, we support about 34,000. So any new projects, any new implementations, not any of them, but specific ones. So I specifically do security IT projects and collaboration tools. So those are the ones I specifically work on. So I just help them from the initiation through the planning to execution and closing them out and then turning them over to regular operations.
That's great. I know we are getting short on time here, so I'm going to try and just run through a couple questions. One I had for Troy was about any advice you have about finances and the transition out of the military.
Well, you know, I'm glad you bring this up because it's a really good question, and it's something that I think we spend a lot of time educating veterans on. If you have people that are in the military and they're sort of on the bubble deciding, do I put in another 5 years or not? What's that going to be differential to my retirement? You can work out those numbers. But I think when people have been in a military role for a long time, they just sort of don't understand how the compensation processes work inside of these large organizations. And that is, you're going to get a base salary and you're probably going to be surprised at where it sits relative to your military pay already, right? That's going to be good. Depending on the roles you're in, there's annual bonuses, right, that run into like large percentage numbers. Depending on the roles you have, you might be able to get some stock into the deal. The retirement plans, if you think about it, Amgen uses a 401k. We double match that 401k. So when you start taking all of those monies into account and you sort of tally them up, usually when you do the net-net on it, you're really not losing money if you decide that you're going to leave 5 years earlier and move into a corporate world. You usually end up on the better side of it because the entire compensation package is so much better.
That's great. What about, I'm wondering if you could share more, anyone can answer this, but share more about benefits at Amgen?
Can I do it? I love to talk about it. Yeah. So look, Amgen is a $22 billion company. They have the benefits package suite that you would expect them to have, which is lavish. I think some things that make the benefits package here differential are time away from work, the retirement, of course, and then the healthcare. So we talked about that retirement plan. What Amgen does is they give you a dollar. Actually, let me stop back on that. So here's how it works here, and here's how a lot of 401ks work. So the company is going to put an amount equal to 5% of your base compensation into your 401k plan, regardless of what you do. You don't like paperwork, you don't do it. So you're getting like retirement money right away, right? You put a dollar into that retirement fund, and Amgen matches that dollar for dollar up to 5%. So you put in a dollar, we put in $2. So now you have $3 in your 401k for the $1 that you put in. That adds up very quickly year over year. Time away from work, it's very lucrative here. It's 42 days of paid time off annually to start. We have all of the federal holidays, Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th of July Day, that stuff, right? We also recognize two company shutdowns. The company shuts down the week of 4th of July, and they shut down for a week or two around Christmas time. These are what I call the humane vacation, because the entire company leaves. So you come back to essentially the number of emails and voicemails that you left with, right? It's not like people are shoveling things on your desk because you're not there to defend yourself. It's a great program. And then there's also 10 personal days that that you get as well. The medical benefits you find on the corporate side are generally pretty good as well. Amgen is award-winning. It's basically an 80-20 split where we pick up 80% of the cost of the healthcare, and then the employee has 20% of the cost of the healthcare. And then you can imagine there's all kinds of options, right? If you're an old person like me with lots of metal and kids, I signed up for the most expensive thing I could possibly get, right? You're on the other side and want the millennial plan. Like, we got you covered kind of every way there. And then the list goes on and on, right? There's tuition reimbursement, adoption benefits. We pay for that. We have a great gym on campus. If you don't have access to that, we pay for the gym. You'll find a lot of commuting benefits. We have them. Most large companies do. If you're living in a place where you can take rails, trains, things like that. Websites where you can get discounts on your phone. I get 7% off of this, you know, phone right here because I work for the company. The list just goes on and on and on. And here's what I would tell people is when you get into a company, very quickly people forget about the maximization of their benefits because it's one big long day and you get all the training and there's like the harassment training video and the compliance video and the benefits video, right? There is tremendous money in these benefits packages and you want to maximize every piece of it and not leave it on the table. And what I mean by tremendous money is in our industry, we look at what these packages are worth kind of relative to salary. It's called a benefit load. And if you're working for a large corporation like Amgen, that benefit load is between 20 and 30%. So add another 30% onto your base salary and like the freebies that you're getting for healthcare and retirement and movie tickets and the gym, and the list goes on and on and on.
That's awesome. Well, I know that we only have about 5 or 6 minutes left, and I would love to, not mute myself when I'm talking. I would love to make space for each of you to just kind of share any final words that we didn't have time to talk about, or just anything that you want to make sure you leave listeners with. So, Mirla, why don't we start with you, and then Bree, and then we'll go to Troy for, what else do you want to make sure listeners know?
Make sure you take your time when you're transitioning. Go through everything. Mm-hmm. Prepare yourself. It's almost a full-time job getting ready to get out. Something that a lot of people don't tell you, because as you're, so 20 years I spent in, you can almost find a how-to guide to do everything except when you're getting out, because everybody that got out is gone. So take your time to prepare yourself, because there's going to be a lot of things that people don't tell you. So like this webcast is great. It gives you a lot of tips on what you should do to move forward. But take your time, make sure you prepare, review your resume, have like 20 people look at it, 20 different people that don't even talk to each other. And then reach out for lots of things that you're qualified for more than what you think you are. Have confidence, but be realistic.
That's awesome. How about you, Bree?
I feel like Mariella, you just—I don't even know how to top that, because that's all so true. I a lot of that is what I was going to say about the having confidence. It can be really intimidating when you're getting out. And definitely, I think I said this on the podcast too, Justin, is just, not giving up, because I do see a lot of people, it is a hard transition. So learning from your mistakes and fixing those, seeking help, there's, the VSO, there's different organizations out there. There's the Women's Veteran Alliance, if you're a female veteran, but finding those support groups, beyond the uniform, and there's several of them on Facebook and Twitter. Just finding that advice that's out there and utilizing that help. I wish I would have done more of that when I was getting out.
Awesome. Thank you. How about you, Troy?
I would leave it with start early. Start often, right? You really want to be engaged in the job search. But I think something really nice about being a veteran, if you're entering today's employment market, is one, it's a fantastic employment market, right? It's a really good market to be entering if you're looking to get into employment. And the other thing I would add is that being a veteran really does give you a lot of cachet and a lot of help. These resources are out there. The veterans advocates exist within companies. They're not hiding. They're trying to find you. You should try to find them, your veteran service officers, reaching out to things like we're doing here beyond the uniform, right? These are all really good things that you can be doing. So you just really want to be out there and you want to be active with it. And reach out to these people. They want to help you. I mean, there's so many resources available that just veterans are sort of not aware of because they don't know, right? Nobody comes to Camp Pendleton at your last thing and, talks about this, right? So the resources are there. Seek them out. They want to help you. They want to help you.
Service.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org. There is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly, and the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.